Welcome to Miracle Business Breakthrough. This is your host, Amy Yamada, and I am so excited to have you tuning into our speaker series. And today I am thrilled to introduce our featured speaker, Brian Carter. And Brian Carter is the number one best-selling author of The Like Economy, LinkedIn for Business, Facebook Marketing, and The Cowbell Principle. He's respected as an international authority on how organizations can generate bigger business results, and he's the owner of The Carter Group, a boutique agency that boosts profits for businesses through digital and social marketing and advertising. So the reason I'm introducing Brian to all of you is that he's developed marketing programs and strategies for companies of all sizes, and he's written for many top marketing blogs, including Social Media Examiner, Mashable, Convince and Convert, Search Engine Journal, and all Facebook. And he's also been interviewed by Bloomberg TV, Mashable, The Wall Street Journal, Forbes, ABC News, Information Week, U.S. News and World Report, Inc. Magazine, and Entrepreneur Magazine. I'm exhausted just sharing
what
you've done. So, Brian, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me, Amy. Appreciate it.
You've done a lot of really cool things. It's just amazing. I could have gone on and on with your bio there, but
I
wanted to make sure that we got to talk to you. So here we are.
Okay. Good.
Awesome. Well, I really enjoyed our conversations leading up today. You're very funny. I like funny people.
No pressure.
And so, but really, to be a little more serious, I would love for you to take us back in time. You know, our theme is Miracle Business Breakthrough. And I would love for you to share with our listeners today some of your own breakthroughs that have gotten you to where you are today. So can you take us on a little journey with you?
Sure, absolutely. You want me to start?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. All right. So, you know, I was pretty happy until about the age of six. Mm-hmm. And at which point you could tell in the photos, I went to kindergarten and did not understand other people. And I was always very introverted. I grew up like I would rather go up to my room and read Star Trek novels than and listen to progressive rock. Like, yes. And yeah, if you watch 40-year-old version, he's got a picture of the first Asia album on his wall. That was me. although I was like an 18-year-old version, whatever. So anyway,
right.
I did not mean to disclose that. That's awesome.
And here we go.
Yeah, here we go.
Yeah.
So, high school was a struggle for me too because I was like, I know I'm good at stuff. I just can't stand out at anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my joke is in high school I was voted least likely to be voted most likely anything. Around the age of 22, I started getting a lot of spirituality and stuff because I'm like, my life is not working very well. So I came across The Power of Positive Thinking and other books like Dale Carnegie's books and things like that. And that made a huge difference for me because I had to really be conscious about being positive because I tend to be kind of a problem solver. So, and I'm also someone who will anticipate risks. And so I'll bring up problems before they even exist. And other people would interpret that as negativity, you know. And so, like, in the back of my mind, I'd be, like, assuming, oh, yeah, we're going to do great stuff. Or things are going to be great, whatever. But I'm like, the way I'm going to make sure that happens is by anticipating problems and fixing them before they happen. But I came off as just very negative, right?
Mm-hmm.
So positivity was the first thing for me that led to, like, better interactions with people. And I really struggled for a long time to find the right career. I mean, even in my like kind of self growth phase, I went through like Taoism and Buddhism, and then I found Chinese medicine, like kind of branched off from that. And I thought, well, this is really cool. And oh, there's a school. So then I moved to California to study that, and became like 4-year master's degree, became an acupuncturist. It turns out that I had thought a lot more about like, how does this medicine work and how can it help me? And by the time I got out to serve clients, I discovered that I wasn't the best personality type to do acupuncture, right? Like people would come and they'd want me to make them feel good right away. And in medicine, I think there are two major personality types. There's like a, a doctor who's kind of a scientist and he's kind of cold, and then there's a nurse who is much more supportive and even at worst codependent and just wants to please people. And I was not the latter, and that's what they wanted. So as I was writing a website about Chinese medicine explained to people, mm-hmm. and I wrote like 3 articles every 2 weeks and grew an email list and eventually put Google ads on there, and I was getting a lot of traffic, and 1 month I made like $5,000 from Google ads, and I thought, whoa, wait a minute, this is interesting.
I might be onto something, yeah.
Yeah, and so I got really, I'm kind of an analytical kind of guy, so I got Excel out, and I started analyzing my traffic and the keywords and went into Google's keyword research and created my own kind of, I wouldn't say algorithm, but a calculation to anticipate whether I would be able to rank for a certain keyword or not, and I found way too many keywords for me to be able to write about, so I teamed up with like 20 other writers, and we put out 1,000 articles in 6 months, and got a couple months in a row, we got $20,000 checks from Google. And
wow.
Yeah, I was really excited. I thought I was rich forever. I'd struck it rich. Mm-hmm. It would last forever, but it went away because the SEO algorithms change constantly, right?
Right.
That's when I moved away from acupuncture. I realized, wow, I'm a really good analytical person. I grew up a computer nerd. Maybe I should be doing this computer stuff instead of medicine with people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I also, I started to use that analysis a lot too. Another breakthrough for me was in terms of making decisions for myself or prioritizing things, I would use Excel. Like in medicine, especially in pain treatment, there's a thing called the analog pain scale. So for things that are not super objective that you can't quantify, you would say, well, how do you rate your pain, 1 to 10? And so I started using that in Excel to make harder decisions for myself. So like if I've got a to-do list and I've got too many things to do and I can't figure out which ones to do, then I would make several columns. Like I'd be like, well, which one I'm going to enjoy the most, and I'd rate that 1 to 10, and which ones will be profitable for me, 1 to 10, which ones have short-term or long-term gain, et cetera. And then from those numbers I assigned to everything, I would like kind of multiply them together and create a score. So then I could just sort all my to-dos to see which ones had the most benefit overall, right?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. That's
yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was another breakthrough for me. Was trying to quantify things that are difficult to quantify and make decisions that way.
So is this something that you've ever shared with other people? Like, do you have a template of this?
No.
Because I think that's really interesting, and it's something that a lot of entrepreneurs ask about, you know, how to really prioritize their day. And, of course, talking about time management and making sure that what they're doing is aligned with their goals. And so I don't know. There just might be something there. You know?
Yeah,
always
I think
like
you're
a great tool.
I think you're right. Well, I'm glad you pointed that out, because I'm always looking for what should I share, what should I teach, what should I make a product out of. So let me make a note of that. So
make a note of that.
And the other thing too is at some point I learned the whole 80-20 thing. And that was ever since I learned that, I've used that in everything that I do, whether it's for myself or for marketing clients. You're always looking for the thing with the biggest lever.
Right. And for those who have never heard the 80-20 thing, I know a lot of us in the entrepreneurial space, we've heard about it and learned about it and all that. But can you share what it is for those who are just now hearing about it for the first time?
Yeah, the idea is that 80% of your results come from 20% of the things you do, and 80% of the things that you can look at it the other way, and you just don't want to be doing the 80% of things that only give you 20% of the results. So the fundamental insight is that not every action has an equal result, and you want to figure out, you need to be able to measure what works, right? And figure out which things have the biggest impact, whether that's, you know, it could be anything. It could be like, you know, which exercises burn the most calories for you. Okay, well, are you spending 80% of your time on exercises you like that aren't burning as many calories, right? So that's the insight, is try to figure out what has the biggest impact and do that the most. You know, a guy that has a teacher who's done a lot of that is Perry, I think it's Perry Marshall, is that right? He's an AdWords guy, and he talks about what are your $1,000 an hour tasks, you know, because mm-hmm. there are things that, especially if you're an entrepreneur, there are things you could do that you probably should have a virtual assistant do, because they're really, anybody could do them, and it, which right. isn't to demean virtual assistants, but it's to say, what's your most special and powerful gift, and what's the thing you could do that would create more income for you in the next 5 years? What's the thing that could have the biggest effect on your career? You should be spending most of your time on that. And often we find it's hard to do that. Mm-hmm. If you don't, one of the things, I didn't even put this on my list, but I schedule time with myself. I mean, it's not, I've heard other people say that, but you have to control your time. And it's easy to kind of leave your time open to appointments that people request or whatever.
Right.
And if you haven't scheduled time for to do those things that get 80% of the results, then you're going to find you're not doing them. Also, they may be things that you need to do at a certain time of day. You might be better at doing it in the evening or in the morning, so you, mm-hmm. you need to make sure you block out that time, right? That's another 80-20 thing. Like during your day, what are the most effective hours for you, right?
Right. So can you give us an example? Can you give us an example of what you do with your time, just so we can hear, like,
yeah.
a day in the life kind of a thing, you know, so we know where you spend your time?
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, and I'm saying, you know how they say you teach the things you need to learn.
Right.
It's something I'm currently working on. Like, this week, I was like, okay, wait, I'm going to block out. Like, I'm doing a big audit for an NBC station in Dallas, like, audit plus show up for a full day to, like, train them and their new staff and stuff on social media. So leading up to the first official audit phone call, I have to make sure I've gone through everything, and mm-hmm. that's just scheduling time for my client, right? But if I'm not careful, I won't devote enough time to it. Probably a better example, because that's just making sure I honor a commitment and a contract, you know. Mm-hmm. A better example would be, like, I just came back from a conference with a lot of discussion, realizing I really need to look at, this is something that's, like, in the background, I've been realizing I need to create some kind of high-ticket training. And there's a lot of stuff I know that I never get to teach. And I've tried doing these smaller info products, the low-cost things. Those can be all right. There's kind of a dead ground in the middle where people, it's too expensive for them to buy easily. And I haven't done stuff, so I need to prioritize that. So I'm glad that I did this before this call. I did put mm-hmm. time on my calendar this week for me to look at that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because otherwise it's something that's just going to keep occurring to me at random times, and I'm not going to put enough time into it to move myself to the next step.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so you have to put that on your calendar to protect. It's in a way you're protecting your future, because, you know, some of the stuff that's like, for here's another example. I really, really, really should create case studies on my website that mm-hmm. show the results I've gotten for clients, you know?
Right.
And they're not really on there, you know? And there's sometimes you have those things in the back of your head where you're like, I know I should do this.
Right.
And you never say to yourself, I'm never going to do it. You just never
right.
actually schedule time with yourself to do it.
Right.
Right. So
exactly.
After speaking, I need to put that on my calendar.
Yes, put it in your calendar. See, really this interview is all about us making sure that Brian gets everything on his calendar.
That's right. That's right. It's all about me.
But it's true, right? When we're talking things out, I mean, I do that all the time where I'll be talking things out with my assistant. I'm like, wait a minute, I need to do this, and I want you to actually check in on me tomorrow morning to make sure that I did it today, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Because if it really is a priority, then it should be on our calendars. If it really is a priority, it should be one of the most crucial things we get done today. Otherwise, it's so easy to put things off and put things off, and some of them can be really great ideas and really great opportunities to grow your business and grow your impact. And so so I love that we're talking about this, because it's a very real thing for anybody at any level of entrepreneurship, right?
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons it's hard to do, too, is because you have to have this attitude that you want to help other people. And so when people are like, oh, can I talk to you on the – can we get on a phone call? Or, you know, you're like, yeah, you know, you want to have time for people, right? But you forget to have time for you or the future you. There's a quote I like. I don't know who, not sure who said it, but it's like, do something today that your do something today that your future self will thank you for.
Mm-hmm.
So think of yourself as like the person you 5 years from now is a totally different person.
Right.
Life has been determined by you right now.
Right.
So yeah. So you have to.
I love that.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I didn't know there was a quote there, but I've shared this a few times recently with some of my clients, because there's times when we may not be in the mood to do something, right? I mean, that happens. And yet if it's something, again, that's a priority, we think, okay, well, I don't really want to do it right now. I probably should do it right now. And so what I tell myself in a very cheesy, dorky way is that, you know what? The future Amy will thank the today Amy for just getting it done.
Yeah,
and it's,
absolutely.
I share this because I used to think it was just something silly that I did, but once I started sharing it with clients, they said, oh my gosh, that's so, it's funny. And I don't know if they're laughing with me or at me, but they're going to use that because it's helpful to know that tomorrow I will be so thankful I got it done today. And that sometimes for me is the tipping point of actually getting it done. So I really get what you're saying. That quote is just who said it first? Did I say it first? Maybe they said it first. It's okay.
I don't know. I mean, I started trying to put that into words a few years ago, but I've seen that kind of thing out there. I don't know if somebody specifically owns it. That's another book we should write.
Yes. Exactly.
The future you thanks
yes,
you.
Yes, the future you. Yes. Yeah, the future you thanks you. I'm going to write that down. Co-authored by Brian and Amy. We have a couple of books that are coming out in the near future, so keep an eye on that. Amazon.com, best-selling books, yes. Too funny. Okay, so you're talking about this high-ticket training. So what is this high-ticket training about?
Well, so if you haven't seen, you've seen like, okay. So there's conferences, there's books, right? Then books have a price point, conferences have a price point, et cetera. But then there are sometimes private 3-day trainings for specific things that have their own price point, or maybe an info product. There are high-priced info products that are, say, like $2,000 for an info product. People like Frank Kern and Brendon Burchard and Jeff Walker and those types of guys put those out. And I know some people, too, that do these, like, 3-day in-person trainings that are priced somewhere like maybe $5,500 bucks or something for 3 days. And, of course, the pricing is like, you know, if you look at – there's a guy named Alan Weiss who has some great books about value-based pricing versus – so you start and you say, well, how much is this going to help my clients? How much money do they make off of this? And when you can say that, especially when you can prove those results to somebody, you can say, oh, so you got $50,000 worth of value or sales or whatever out of this thing I did for you. Why didn't you pay me $10,000 for it, right?
Right.
Whatever that multiple should be. And I think often people are willing to buy something if they see that it has a 5 or 10 times multiple value compared to the price, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other thing is psychologically – if you are a $9 or a $19 product person, people may perceive you as having less value than someone that only does, you know, $5,500 trainings or whatever. And it's the same thing in speaking. Like when I started doing keynote speaking, I've been told not to quote my actual prices. I don't know. I think for entrepreneurs, it's probably a good idea to do it. I don't know really why you would want to hide this stuff. because as you speak, your prices go up. And I think also in business, when you're in a service business, your prices go up when you either realize you have more value than you thought, or you realize you priced yourself too low and you're not getting any price resistance, right? So, so when I started, I think my first paid speech was like only $2,000. And then I had a $5,000 rate for a while, and then $6,000, $6,500, now it's $7,500. And then the first client that paid me that amount, treated me like a total rock star, like was the best speaking experience I've ever had. And I did a really good job for them. In fact, I even like, we prepped everything and I came out, they introduced me, I came out and my PowerPoint didn't come up and there was just silence. So I'm just staring at like 300 people going like, can I get some tech help, please? but because I have all this stand-up comedy background, I just started doing my jokes and they liked it. And as a result, like, it was kind of cool because that later the guy was like, oh, I'm so sorry that happened. I was like, no, don't you realize that I look even better now that I was able to pull that off. but anyway, so that, so when you start having that higher fee, people perceive you have a higher value. I know there are companies that will not hire a speaker who costs less than $10,000. And I mean, some of it's really arbitrary. It's like, who says you're worth $12,000 or $10,000 or whatever, right?
Right.
It's kind of up to you. And when you try to raise your prices too soon, you're afraid. You know, you're afraid you're not going to get any business at that level. But if you don't charge above a certain level, you're just, if you're a $3,000 social media keynote speaker, you're just not as good as a $10,000 one, right? That's the way people see it.
The perceived value, right?
Yeah. Yeah, just like, is a Mercedes really that much better of a car? Is it
That's
really that much better? Or is it just that only people with that much money can have one? And it's a social signal to people. You have a real Rolex, that's a social signal. That you know, so the value is sometimes arbitrary.
So let me ask you this, because this is such an interesting topic, and when people, there's a couple questions come to mind. One is that when people are thinking about speaking, for example, because I'm sure there's listeners who are tuning in right now who are considering speaking, or they've done some speaking and they want to expand that opportunity there of growth, what would you say they should do in terms of pricing earlier on in their entrepreneurship?
Well, I mean, when you start, you want to get gigs, for one thing. And the problem is, I think it's important to make the shift from just free speaking to paid speaking. And I mean, when I was first starting, I heard all this advice like, you just need to go do rotaries and eventually someone will pay you and then you'll know you're good enough. And I just never got around to, like, you know, hounding all the rotaries down. It's a tough, pricing is probably one of the most difficult things in marketing because you don't always have data to go on. You don't know what other people charge. But you can go on to various speaker bureau sites and see what people are charging. And you're just going to have to ask yourself, like, what am I comfortable with, you know, and then probably charge 50% more than that, you know. It depends, and that totally depends on the personality, because if you know you're somebody that overvalues yourself financially, maybe don't go 50% higher. So you got to know yourself. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
No, it does, because I think it's just something where, you know, people just don't know how to get started. And I think that there's so many different ways to go about doing it. So it's just interesting to hear from someone who's done more speaking, you know, how to get started and what would make most sense. So, you know.
And there's a lot of different types of speaking. I mean, there are people that speak for free because they know that they're going to get clients for their service out of it. Or there are people who do the types of speaking where it's okay to pitch from the stage for their info product or their live event. And that's another thing too. Like I got to speak, I got to present on a webinar for a woman that does a lot of live events, and she said, know, I never invite anybody to speak at my things, but I would like you to do that. But it's, you got to sell something from the stage. So I'm like, okay, that's another reason I need to design this program. You know, it's something mm-hmm. I don't have. So that means if I don't have the back end for it, I can't take advantage of that opportunity.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So what is the other question I was thinking about when you were talking about, you know, smaller or, you know, less pricey info products versus the high ticket training? Because this is something that I hear a lot of entrepreneurs talking about. I'm always fascinated to hear what, you know, people offer, what is their business model. And I hear everything from, you know, you want to sell something that's really inexpensive and reach the masses, and you start doing the math and it's this insane amount of revenue and all that, which I'm like, oh, that's awesome. And then there's the other end of it where it's more about really kind of having more private or small group training at the higher ticket level. Do you have a preference over what you would rather offer?
Well, I think you gotta start with what you offer and who that audience is, because you know I think this extends beyond info products to like the software as a service level or mm-hmm. type of things, because those guys, some of them will charge, you know, as low as I don't know $20-$30 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know it's something like if it's something like Pandora Radio, you know. There are so many people that like music, right? You have a huge audience that will buy. I think where you get in trouble is thinking that just because there is a big audience that they all will pay a small amount of money, right? Because you still have to reach them. And if you don't have access to that audience, then you're going to have to use advertising. And if you're going to use advertising, you have to have enough margin to be able to afford the cost per sale of that advertising. And, you know, the lowest cost per sales, because I've done AdWords since 2005 and Facebook ads since 2010, and we've moved lately to try to get lead gen and sales for clients with Facebook ads. And so we have experience there. And generally speaking, with Google ads, your average cost per click is $250. If you only convert like 1% of those people, your average cost per sale is $250. So if you don't have a $250 margin, you can't mm-hmm. use Google. And that's really rough sketching, right? Your keyword may be slightly different, et cetera. But with Facebook, we've seen e-commerce sales. Well, with pizza delivery, we saw them really low, like just a few bucks. With another, like a manufactured item to reduce recoil on rifles, this one client of ours, we've mm-hmm. seen cost per sale as low as $12, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but it totally depends on your niche, your offering, et cetera. You're going to have to get in there and find out what your actual cost per sale is. The problem with that $9 product or $19 product is you have very little wiggle room for the advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing people don't understand about selling online is that if you look at a funnel, every single step you make someone take, you lose most of the people, right? Like, think about it this way. What percentage of people open up your email?
Right.
People are like, oh, 15%, 30%, whatever. Regardless, most of them don't. Right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So most people don't open your email. The people that open it, most of them don't click. The people that go mm-hmm. to your website, most of them don't buy. Right?
Right.
Every step you put in there, you lose most of your people.
Mm-hmm.
And so people will overestimate what they're capable of. They'll be like, oh, I have 100,000 fans. Well,
mm-hmm.
I look at the math and I think you're going to sell maybe five times. You're going to sell like five products per post. Five
right.
out of like 100,000.
Right.
so you really, you can't, most people overestimate their ability to sell with their, given their current list or network.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the argument for the high ticket thing. Because if what you do is specialized and super valuable and you can prove it,
mm-hmm.
then there should be people who'd be willing to pay you a good, it's easier to sell 10 people on a $1,000 thing than 1,000 people on a $10 thing.
Okay, say that one more time slowly, because we're all going to write it down. Everybody write this down. Write it down.
Yeah, and I got this. That came from Kevin Nations, right? So I attribute it. If you, it's easier to sell $1,000 product or service to 10 people than it is to sell a $10 product to 1,000 people.
Okay.
It's also easier to do customer service
right.
to 10 people, right? And every single person you talk to will tell you that the people who pay them more money
mm-hmm.
are easier to deal with. So
yeah,
the lower,
yeah,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
The lower, the higher, the people that will pay you that higher price, they just tend to have less. I don't know. There's less BS going on. There's less.
Right.
You know, there's more disrespect going on when people have only paid you $10. It's really weird.
See, this is such an interesting topic because I've heard, you know, a lot of people talk about doing the info products or subscription-based models and that kind of thing at the lower price point and reach the masses. And they talk a lot about really focusing on the marketing and the conversion rate. So, for example, for those of you who are listening, if this is kind of new to you, then it's thinking about, you know, when you see a web page that is sharing, you know, an opportunity to join a membership or to buy a product, and it maybe say it's about weight loss, you know, talk about, hey, you've been struggling with your weight. Here's this great offer, and normally you would pay this amount for a personal trainer, blah, 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 blah. But for you today, special price, you know, kind of thing. And,
yeah.
And the next thing you know, it's slash this, slash that, and it's only $9.99 a month. Why wouldn't you do this? So it's really kind of reeling you in if this is a pain point for you, and then it gets you down to this, you know, $9.99 or $19.99 a month, which most people can wrap their heads around. So you say, sure, I'm just going to do it, and then you're in this recurring payment. And whether or not you use it, it's something that you bought into. And so from a revenue-generating standpoint, if you think about how you focus on the from behind the scenes, if you focus on the marketing opt-in page, the sales web page, and getting that page to a point of having a high conversion rate, then you can tell, okay, if I spend this much money in advertising, then this many people, in theory, will buy into it, and this is what the generated revenue will be, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, on one end, I think about how I really want to offer products that people actually use and not just pay for, you know, on a recurring payment. But then from a business standpoint, it's like, well, it's kind of cool. You know, you have this residual income coming in. So I admit that I'm intrigued by that. So what do you say about that? What do you say to that?
Well, residuals or membership, like monthly stuff is difficult. And I've only, like I currently have a product I'm trying to do that with, and we'll see how it goes. I talked to other people who said it's really difficult to keep people in it for a long period of time. I can also tell you, like, my experience with my first course with Facebook marketing was called FanReach. It was like 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember the exact numbers. We had like, I don't know, 1,000 people take the free course. And then I forget how many people bought. I think it's about 100 or so bought the paid course. And every time people bought, every time we were going to increase the price, because we're like, okay, we're adding this new thing here and we're going to increase the price. So if you want to get in, buy before this time, and they would buy. So urgency got more people to buy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I found was that when you have to use, like some of these marketing gurus talk about those tactics, like scarcity and urgency and all that stuff, the people that buy then are the people, like you're saying, who are less likely to actually use it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to have an actual impact on people and help them, that may not be the way to go.
Right.
Yeah.
So interesting. Yeah. Anyway, I know we kind of went off on this whole tangent
or
this whole road, but I think
no.
it's something that, you know, a lot of people are wanting to learn about. I've heard a lot of people asking which business model should they apply to their business if they want to grow it, you know, because I think a lot of newer coaches in particular or service-based entrepreneurs, they start off with doing, you know, one-on-one coaching at a very, you know, they want to be careful with the pricing. So they might say, okay, it's $50 an hour or $100 an hour. And if I get enough people, I'll make a decent living and I'll be able to help them. You know, that's really beautiful. But then they think about, you know, over time, they either aren't getting enough clients, and so they're not generating enough revenue, or they're getting burnt out by the one-on-ones at that small amount of revenue. And so this is kind of thinking about, okay, do they then go to a group training kind of a program, or do they go to creating an actual product, or maybe it's already, you know, like, you know, a lot of people talk about Marie Forleo's B-School, you know, it's pre-produced, and she's got some office hour calls that she offers to the participants. So it's just interesting, because I think that it's great to think about having a resource where they can look at all the different business models, and this is something I've been thinking about, yourself, where you can see, okay, here are the different types of business models that I can apply to my business, what are the pros and cons of each one of them, and which one really resonates with what I'm wanting to do. If it's just about the money, you know, which for some people it might be the case, then they can think about, okay, what would be really mass appeal, low cost, and I can do, you know, figure out the conversion rates and all that. Maybe I do want something that's subscription-based. But like you said, you still have to have something that's going to keep people interested on an ongoing basis, right? And then there's the other options in terms of premium one-on-one coaching, group training programs, you know, or shorter pre-produced information products. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the key is pick one and test it out. Because for one thing, it can be overwhelming how many options there are. And everybody I know, including myself, tries a number of them. They don't all work out, you know.
Right.
I also think people, unfortunately, they could have a certain amount of success with their service business, and then in a way they kind of devalue it in their mind because they're like, where I really want to be is where I don't have to work as much and I can – you know, wouldn't that be great if? And a lot of courses are sold based on that. Wouldn't it be great if? So you try it out. I've seen a lot of different business models work. Like I know a guy who is always selling 7-week, 1-hour a week classes for $777. That's David Newman, who I think you're going to talk to actually. And so I know that works. I know it works for him. But you have to see what works for you. And, I mean, this goes to this book we wrote called The Cowbell Principle. It's all about, like, what do you do that's valuable to other people? So you're going to have to look and say, like, is the value I'm giving to people really contingent on that one-on-one? Because am I really going to be able to translate that into a service? A product. Because if it's like our interview here, very organic, like, we don't know where it's going to go, like, from one second to the next. If it's customized like that for every person, it's going to be tough to turn that into a product. I mean, I'm not saying you can't do it. You're just going to have to look really closely at all the things you do and say in your coaching calls to try and turn that into the product. And then you're going to have to test all the different product titles or product topics or product objectives for people, right? To see which one, not just which one, here's a mistake I made in the past, not just which ones they say they would buy, but which ones they actually buy.
Right.
And the only way to do that is to sell it, which is why, you know, what Jeff Walker calls a sea launch, and I've seen other people do as well, is you outline the course and sell it before you create it.
Right. I've heard of this.
Because I've created – the last course I created, I relied on a survey, and the sales did not match up to the survey. So I made this mistake. I loved creating that course. It was a ton of fun. But, you know, I only made, like, probably $1,800 on it. That is not a good use of my time compared to the other ways that I make money. So, you know,
so when they outline the course and sell it before they've created it, what do they base the outline off of? Or do they outline and then see how it works?
Yeah, what's going to be in it? And just like any good blog post, you want to have, like, every subsection has a benefit to the buyer, you know? Usually it's like how to do what to get what, right? How to do X to get Y, where Y is the thing they want to get in their business that they care about or their life or whatever. You know, how to do yoga lattes to lose weight, you know.
Right.
So if you do that, how-to is great. People love that. But, there are models for this, too. Like, I would you know, look at what Jeff Walker says about the seed launch. It's in his book called Launch, I think.
Launch?
Or, yeah.
And yeah. What's his name? Jeff?
Jeff Walker.
Walker. Okay.
Yeah, he has this thing. It's called, he's kind of the product launch formula guy. He's been doing that for like 10 years, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would watch, like, you know, too, like, you know, David Newman is successful at that. So look mm-hmm. at his, like, when he puts out a new course, look at his first video where he starts to outline all the stuff that's going to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing people teach is, like, you may want to get people on your list with a free thing, an ebook or a video or something, but you have to focus on getting them a result right away. And
mm-hmm.
you also need to make sure you give your best stuff up front. Like, the weird thing is, if you hold back your best stuff, maybe nobody buys.
Right.
If you give your best stuff for free, you've already proved how useful you are, and they're more likely to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Got it. I'm taking notes if you're wondering why. Whenever I pause, it's because I'm like, this is so
yeah.
good. I'm like, give the best stuff up front, which makes sense,
yeah.
right? People, I'm sure the resistance in people is like, but if I give it away, then they don't need me anymore. But if you've proven that you're valuable to them, then they'll want more of you.
Right.
So that,
yeah.
that totally
they,
makes
they
sense.
They currently don't need you
right.
anyway. They currently
right.
don't need you anyway.
Right.
So you have nothing to lose.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's just,
exactly.
and it, I mean, if people wouldn't do this if they had found that they could just give out general useless information to get people
mm-hmm.
to buy in the first place, they
mm-hmm.
would definitely be saving their best stuff. But you still want to over-deliver. I mean, so, for example, you might say it's going to be a seven-week course, and then you do an a surprise eighth week, extra
mm-hmm.
content, an extra Q&A or something.
Right,
right. Yeah, but again, it's like that all that stuff, switching to a different business model, is a test. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, a lot of businesses fail. And even
mm-hmm.
within your business, a lot of your initiatives will fail. So you have to say to yourself, I'm going to plan on trying five different ways to do info products or courses or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If you succeed on your second one, bonus. Great.
Right. Right.
But you're going to have to be, otherwise you're just going to be so discouraged. Or you might have done it in a way where you can't afford to do more.
And this is not Brian Carter being negative. This is, right?
This is,
I can,
right.
Yeah.
That's right back to my risk reduction.
Right.
Think of the problems ahead of time.
Think of the problems ahead of time so that you can
yeah.
be solution oriented and just say,
yep.
okay, well, some of them are just not going to work out, and just know that ahead of time and know that it's going to be okay. And I, you know, looking back, why didn't we have this conversation like 5 years ago? I just want to know.
I don't know. I might not. I would not have been able to yeah. tell you as many of these things
right.
5 years
that's
ago.
Right, that's true. That's true. And I probably wouldn't listen. I probably wouldn't. Gosh, you're so negative, Brian. Jeez.
yeah.
But now I get it. You know, it's one of those things that no matter how much passion and drive and even, you know, I tend to be the optimist, right? So I tend to be like, oh, it's all going to work out. It's going to be great. And then when it doesn't, it's like, wah, wah, I'm kind of sad now. But that's okay because I keep going. But it's really about knowing that it's not always going to work out exactly as you planned, and that's okay
well,
because you're
you
going to learn
every yeah,
step.
The positive thing about me is I know that I want to win in the end, right?
Right.
And
yes.
in order to do that, I know I'm going to have to try a bunch of stuff.
Right.
And in order to protect against my own disappointment, I'm not going to be as attached to every single thing, because sometimes you'll find, like, the stuff that works for you, sometimes you just blunder into. You
right.
know, it wasn't
sure.
a result of some grand plan.
Right.
It's just another reason not to put too much into a product before you sold it.
Right. And sometimes it's going back to what you started doing that you quit early on. I don't know. This is, there's when you're able to look back, I always think about Steve Jobs. And one time he was talking about, it's always easy to connect the dots when you're going backwards, right?
Mm,
see
yeah.
how everything is connected. When you're moving forward, you can't see the future. You don't – everything – you know, there's always that fear with uncertainty. We don't know what's going to happen. But when you look back, it's easier to tell, like, oh, that makes sense. And it's all it is all connected. We just don't always see it right now. So, but you try different things and you see what works. And sometimes you come back to some of the core elements of why you launched your business in the first place. And you say, you know what, I'm just going to bring it back and – and I'm going to try it this way now that I know what I know at this new vantage point. I'm going to move forward. So, I love that you have that desire to win, like most of us entrepreneurs do, you know, and it's just about really thinking about what's the next best step. So,
and it's really just another application of 80-20 as well, which means four out of your five ideas are going to fail. Right.
Oh, God, you're such a pessimist. I'm just kidding.
I know. Well,
but that one idea is going to work, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. But plan on paying for five.
Plan on paying for five. See?
Yep.
Gosh. Okay.
So once you've got that one, you're going to be able to ride that one for a long, long time and profit from it, and it's going to make up for the four that failed. So, okay.
See, that's what we wanted to hear. That's happy.
Okay. There you go.
I'm just kidding. All of it's important. It's good.
Yeah.
So let's bring it to present day. So what are you focusing on now in your business?
Well, so it's a combination of things. I mean, mostly what we do for our consulting that makes money is Facebook ads, because very few people can either do that or do it well. Plus, not everybody seems to be able to learn it because it has a bunch of different skills and talents involved in doing it, psychology and math and analysis and all that stuff. So Facebook ads are a big thing for us. We do some audits, like the one we're doing for the NBC station. We do SEO and social audits and digital audits overall. And then we also manage other ads, AdWords and stuff like that, not so much as Facebook. And then the speaking that I do and all that stuff. But other than that, I'm focusing on developing what we've been talking about, like some kind of – I think probably it's going to be like an online course and then a live one too.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Yeah. But I'm still working on the topics for that, you know.
Right.
There's going to be something really specific. It's going to be like Facebook ads for lead gen, you know, become an amazing Facebook ads person. Or it's going to be overall digital, you know, what new entrepreneurs need to know.
Mm-hmm. And for those who haven't heard about audits for social and digital, can you explain what that means when you do a social or digital audit?
Yeah. Well, okay, so like I could write a book about what you could do with social media and all that stuff, but if we do a social audit, we're looking at what should you specifically do. And so let's say you've been doing Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn or whatever for a while. Mm-hmm. We're going to help you go in and see what's working and what's not, and help you. I think some people don't seem to have the habit of learning from what they're doing so that what they do in the future is more effective. We're going to do that. We're going to apply all the best practices we know to what you're doing or not doing, and create first you go through a questionnaire, and then we do a phone call to make sure we have clear all your goals and priorities, resources, et cetera. And then we create a big recommendations document. It comes in a PDF, but it's built with PowerPoint so that it's easier to read. And depending on the scope of the audit, whether it's social or SEO or all digital or whether we're looking at multiple websites and all that kind of stuff, could be different. You know, it could be anywhere from 30 pages to 100.
Oh wow!
So it's detailed, not just strategy, but also often tactics that you should use. And then we do a review phone call after you've looked through that to talk about it. And then you either are going to go implement that yourself, or maybe you want us to do some part of it or something like that.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Very cool. So I know we chatted about this a little bit in our previous conversations, but a lot of our listeners are newer coaches and entrepreneurs that would love to know how to get to that first sweet spot in business of earning $10,000 each month on a consistent basis. So I'm asking each of our experts to help everybody out and share their top three tips that our listeners can apply right away in their businesses to work towards that goal. So what three tips can you share today?
Yikes. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is I don't think you want to – I would try not to have more than 10 or 20 clients, right? So if you're going to make $10,000 a month, you're going to need – what is that? $500 to $1,000 a month service. Or if you're doing hourly, what is that? Like, depending on what you charge, $100 an hour or something, that's like 5 to 10 hours a month, which is, so I would make sure you're structuring your, what you're offering mm-hmm. in a way that you know you're going to be able to make that much money.
Right.
For one thing. What I try to do a lot of thought leadership, which really means like blogging and maybe some videos and then making sure people see that. My background
thought
being
leadership?
Yeah.
Thought leadership.
Okay. It's like writing books. Like the word author of a book and the word authority have the same root.
Interesting.
So
yep.
You want to be an authority because it's much easier to sell somebody when you've proven with your content that you are exceptionally expert at what you do.
Mm-hmm.
The worst client inquiries are the ones where they say they're looking at 3 or 4 other people.
Right.
Because that means do they want the cheapest one? Or do they really want the best one? But to me, it means they aren't sold on me already.
Mm-hmm.
So I do whatever I can to make sure people are at least half sold before they contact me.
Right.
And then I will schedule a time with them. I do not just call anybody whenever they want.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to put people through hoops to find out if they're worth your time.
Right.
So I schedule it. And then if they, I give them 15 minutes free
mm-hmm.
because a ton of people, in my experience, complain about they took me to lunch to pick my brain
mm-hmm.
and didn't pay me. And I was like, well, don't let them do that.
Right.
if they're going to be a potential client, then there's only one way that you give them information.
Mm-hmm.
It's if they pay you hourly
mm-hmm.
or for some other service, right? So
mm-hmm.
you will get on that 15-minute phone call to determine which of your services they belong in.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't know the answer to that by the end, then you're just going to go hourly after that.
Right, okay.
So you're going to value yourself by pricing it higher and by not allowing yourself, not giving information out for free. I know that contradicts what I say with info products, but it's just a different model. This is what I found works for selling services and consulting and stuff.
Right.
And then when you're blogging, you want to always, when you're coming up with a blog post, always be thinking, is this going to make my potential customer more likely to buy from me? Because
mm-hmm.
with social media and blogging, a lot of people waste a lot of time writing posts that they think are going to get likes and shares.
Right.
But if they don't get your sales, they're in that 80% of things that are not getting you the results.
Got it.
So your 80-20 on your blogs and stuff is, and I've got a list of things that help, that are more likely to convert. If I can pull it up or we can put it in the blog post. But yeah, one thing is mistakes. Like whatever your topic area is, if you write a blog post about 5 mistakes people make in that area,
mm-hmm.
then here's something I found psychologically. I think there was some research to back this up, or at least that's what I've heard, that people are more likely to do something new out of fear than for a positive reason.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm afraid how I'm going to look on the beach. That's why
right.
they're exercising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not to honor you or whatever. It's not some positive thing.
Right.
So if they're afraid of making mistakes and they know that you know what the mistakes are, you're going to lead them through the jungle without them falling into quicksand.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's another way to create authority.
Got it.
I don't know if I gave you 3 things there, or how many things I gave you.
Yeah, so you said 10 to 20 clients max, and know that the structure of what you're offering can make that amount of money, right? So
yeah.
$500 to $1,000 per month service. And then you talked about thought leadership and blogging and And then within that, you were talking about valuing yourself and making sure that you're pricing accordingly. So that's kind of three.
Yeah, I would make sure with your thought leadership, with your thought leadership, make sure it's getting seen. So I personally spend anywhere from $20 to $40 a day on Facebook ads, and probably $10 or $20 a day on Google ads.
Okay.
Because you have to be out there in front of people, and you never ever know. Like the blog post somebody saw from you a year ago might make them call you today. You never know when it's going to happen. So always be putting yourself out there in front of people.
Right. Good stuff. That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing those tips. That's great.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners today?
Yeah. So we didn't go much into the cowbell principle, but it's really important, like, that make sure that you're unique enough that people want to work with you and that they know that what you offer is something they're excited about and they can see from you that you're passionate about it. That's having a cowbell, and it's based on the Moore Cowbell skit from Saturday Night Live. So we wrote a whole book about that. And I recommend you check it out, buy it on Amazon. But also, we'll put in the blog post a link to, I'll give you a free chapter, which is the one where you figure out what your cowbell is. So once you've got that, you'll be able to say in just a few sentences, it's like a unique selling proposition, something really, really powerful where people go, oh, I want that. And, you know, they're the best at it. So I should definitely work with them. Yeah.
So what do you share with people? What are you the best at?
One of my co-author says I'm the best at implementation.
Okay.
Right? So I'm the best at, like, if you want me to create an info funnel or Facebook ads or whatever, like, I'm really good at getting that stuff done, which probably goes more to that stuff we talked about earlier, like how do you prioritize and do the 80-20 and all that stuff. But like most people, I still do like other stuff that's not my cowbell just because I like it or because, you know, it pays the bills. So
But implementation, that's a big one. You know, a lot of people have a lot of ideas, but if they don't implement them and take action, then what's the point? You know, so I think that's a really great skill set to have and to offer your clients. And so do you work with all different sizes of businesses then?
Yeah, we do. We've worked with anywhere from, you know, the big brands, I could name off a bunch, but they're on my site, to medium-sized or small-sized entrepreneurs, solopreneurs. Mm-hmm. We've worked with all of them and all different B2C, B2B. We've worked in different objectives, too. So I like having that breadth because that way I know what works and what doesn't.
Right, absolutely. So if I need help on my Facebook advertising, I now know who to call is what you're saying.
Yep.
Awesome. Yep, I love resources. That's so good. Well, very cool. Well, thank you so much. This has been a really interesting conversation. And I think that, you know, I don't know about all of you, but I've been taking mad notes on everything. It's always interesting to talk to other entrepreneurs that have really focused on different areas of business, right? Which is part of the reason why we're doing this and also sharing our stories of the breakthrough moments. And Brian, you're just really, it's really interesting. I feel like we got to kind of get a little tour of your brain and how it works, all the, like the metrics. And like, I'm not the most analytical person, so I'm always fascinated by people who are, and I want to learn because I feel like I'm not very smart in that area. And that's not a positive thing to say because I know I can learn, but it's just not the way my mind naturally goes like first. You know, I'm very expressive and put myself out. I'm comfortable putting myself out there. You know, I'm excited about, you know, reading the chapter and buying the book, the cowbell principle, which is not the cowboy principle.
No.
Can I just please share this story really quick?
Yeah.
Can I please?
Yeah.
So in our previous conversation, I thought that Brian said the cowboy principle. I thought he said the cow. I was like, so tell me more about the cowboy principle. Like, I don't know. I thought it was kind of like, you know, this kind of Western theme, and then he was applying it to business. Did you just say cowboy? And I said, wait a minute, what? And I got all embarrassed. I got all, good thing I didn't see in person, we're on the phone. I'm like all flushed, right? And he said, no,
it's
cowboy.
That's because now I know you're going to think for cowboys. That's why you're flushing.
It must be a thing. See, I'm all hot again. Where's the fan? So no, it is the cowbell principle.
Yep.
And some of you might be too young I don't know, but for those of us who know the more cowbell skit from SNL, if you aren't familiar, please, before you do anything else in your life, I'm sure it's on YouTube, right?
Or Hulu,
Or Google. Just Google more cowbell from Saturday Night Live, and it is the funniest skit you'll ever see. So I'm excited to read this. But, yeah, so this has been a really, really great interview. So thank you so much for your time and your gift. This is very, very cool. So,
thanks for having
me. It's been awesome. So I do hope to chat with you again in the near future.
Yep.
And we'll make sure that the links are all on your speakers page. So if you want to check out, for those of you who are listening, if you want to check out that free chapter from the Cowbell Principle, then be sure to check that out and also his website. So awesome. Well, thank you. Brian, we hope to talk to you again soon.
Cool. Thanks, Amy.
And to those of you who are listening to our series, I want to thank you for tuning in and empower you to break free and turn your small business into your dream business. Take care.